I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest tonight is Tanya Harder Pierce, a master's prepared clinical psychologist and marriage, family, and child counselor who is currently on leave, having just published the second edition of her book, Outsmarting Your Cancer, Alternative Non-Toxic Treatments That Work. She will talk with us about two major areas in the book, Protocell as a treatment for cancer and the PSA as a diagnostic tool for prostate cancer. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Tanya, and I look forward to hearing about an effective cancer treatment that you discuss in your revised edition of Outsmarting Your Cancer, Alternative Non-Toxic Treatments That Work.
Good morning, Carl. It's great to be here.
Thank you, Tanya. Now, can you tell us then, what is Protocell and how was it developed?
Protocell is a very fascinating alternative treatment for cancer, and I call it a treatment because it actually is pretty much a standalone therapy, and it is a single product therapy. What it is a liquid formula, and it was developed by an American chemist named Jim Sheridan, and he actually came up with the idea of this formula back in 1936. Then he spent about 50 years developing the formula and perfecting it, and he used laboratory mice in various locations that he worked. Some of the locations were actually official cancer laboratories, like the Patel Cancer Institute. But he worked with laboratory mice and perfected it over about a 50-year period to the point where Jim Sheridan was achieving about an 80% complete success rate in curing mice with cancer, which is really phenomenal. This wasn't a rate of just achieving tumor regression or, you know, reducing tumor size. It was actual curing of the mice with cancer at about 80%. Now, this is actually a formula that is currently classified as a dietary supplement. It's not approved by the FDA as a cancer treatment, and it's not sold as a cancer treatment under the guise of that. However, it's been used by people, and it was developed actually as a cancer treatment by Jim Sheridan, but he couldn't get the FDA to approve it and to study it effectively. In fact, there's a lot of very interesting history that goes along with this formula that I present in my book that you can read about. And the interesting thing is that since about 1988, literally thousands of people have used this formula to help them recover from cancer, and there have been many complete cures, and virtually, you know, most of the country doesn't know about it, and they just have not heard about Protocell. But it's a phenomenal product, and what happened was when I started looking into cancer treatments in the alternative world, I discovered that there weren't any current up-to-date books on Protocell. And I was already in the process of writing my book, Outsmart Your Cancer, that presents a lot of different alternative therapies. And I decided that I would give more space to Protocell than any of the other therapies in my book because most people didn't know about it and there weren't any other up-to-date books on it. So my book is actually the definitive source of information on Protocell. So a lot of people buy my book for that information alone, and it gives a lot of details as to how to use it. As I said, it has a very interesting history, and one of the things I know your listeners are going to be wondering right away is this a vitamin, mineral, or herbal supplement? And to that question, I have to answer no. It's actually not a combination of vitamins or minerals that your body needs. It's not an herbal supplement either, and it's also not homeopathic. What it is a very unique, completely non-toxic formula that Jim Sheridan developed, and it's made up of a combination of synthetic and natural ingredients, but these ingredients really mean nothing by themselves. It's all it's all kind of like how they're put together. For instance, some of the ingredients are things like tetrahydroxyquinone, rhodazonic acid, gluconic acid, triquinoil, pyrocatechol, things like that, things that most people have never heard of. But it's such an interesting product because it's one of those things where the sum is much greater than the parts. And so when you put all these things together in just the right way, what they do in the body, and it's, again, extremely non-toxic. This has been proven by many, many studies. In fact, it's less toxic than an aspirin a day.
Mm-hmm.
When you take Protocell on a regular basis, and you have to take it 4 or 5 times a day and just keep taking it every day, what happens is the Protocell goes into your body and it blocks a certain amount of the energy production in anaerobic cells of the body. And, of course, anaerobic mm-hmm. cells are those cells that, you know, you've probably talked about this in a number of your other interviews, but those are cells that are damaged or abnormal cells. They no longer use oxygen to mm-hmm. produce energy for themselves. And, of course, Otto Warburg, the Nobel Prize winner, proved that cancer cells are primarily anaerobic, and so they use an anaerobic mechanism called glycolysis to produce energy for themselves. And what Protocell does is it blocks some aspect of glycolysis just effectively enough to reduce the energy of cancer cells in the body until they end up falling apart, because mm-hmm. they actually just die of not having enough energy. It's kind of like when you turn your car off, but the lights are still on, so the battery is still being used, and the energy in the battery gets depleted, and then the battery dies in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what happens with the cancer cells when a person uses Protocell. And so over time, the cancer cells of the body literally burst open and fall apart, and then the body simply processes out those basic protein parts out of the body. It's really a fascinating treatment.
Mm-hmm. Now, Tanya, is this more effective if you use some mental, spiritual activities along with it, or is this pretty standalone treatment?
Well, I certainly am a believer of enlisting the mind-body connection.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a mind-body connection going on all the time,
mm-hmm.
and our thoughts and our belief systems are constantly affecting what is going on the physical level in our body. So for optimum results in any treatment for disease, whether it's cancer or Parkinson's or multiple sclerosis, for optimum results, I certainly believe that utilizing the mind-body process in the most effective possible way,
mm-hmm.
in other words, you know, trying to keep your thoughts positive and trying to reduce stress and let go of fear, things like that,
mm-hmm.
will always be helpful. The only thing that I sort of qualify that with is that I don't want some people out there to think, for instance, that you have to believe this works for it to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like it's certainly not just a belief system. For instance, many people have actually given this formula to their animals, and I've had a number of cases where people gave Protocell to their dog with cancer,
mm-hmm.
and the dog got well.
Oh.
Or they've given it to their toddler. There's a case on my audio CD, for instance. My second edition of Outsmart Your Cancer comes with an audio CD in it now.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the stories on the audio CD told by the father of this little boy is that his boy was diagnosed with a very deadly childhood brain tumor at the age of 18 months. So this little boy was only a year and a half, and he was diagnosed with diffuse pontine glioma, which is a brainstem tumor that virtually has no record of survival with conventional treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Because Protocell is so effective and at the same time so non-toxic, it can easily be given to babies. And this couple did a very short stint of radiation first just to reduce the tumor quickly enough so that they would buy some time. But the cancer was not gone yet. And then they switched over to Protocell,
mm-hmm.
and gave their little boy Protocell around the clock every day. And this little boy started having a recovery, and his symptoms went away of the brain tumor, and he grew up. He's now, I believe, 6 years old and has a completely normal life, has been going to school and basically living a completely normal life as a little six-year-old boy.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I don't want to put out the idea that you have to believe in something necessarily for it to work, because there is scientific backing behind this as to why it works. But sure, of course,
mm-hmm.
any enlistment of the mind-body connection or a spiritual mm-hmm. support system, a spiritual belief system, will always be helpful.
Now, does the amount that you take vary by age and other conditions, or is it the same?
It doesn't vary too much. There's maybe a slight variation that if you're dealing with a very small child that's say, under 60 pounds, you might start out with a smaller dose, but you can pretty quickly get up to the normal dose even
mm-hmm.
with a small child of that size.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I do talk about in my book, I spend a lot of space giving people as much information as I can on how to use Protocell in the most effective way. It's actually a very simple product to take because
mm-hmm.
it's the basic dose is a quarter teaspoonful either four times or five times around the clock, and you take one of your doses in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much all you have to do. But what I do present in my book is the way people need to understand how to use it most effectively, because unfortunately the only difficult thing about Protocell is that you have to stop a lot of your other supplements because
mm-hmm.
there are many vitamins or minerals or herbs that can actually interfere with Protocell's action.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, when people take Protocell for their cancer, they have to stop supplementing with vitamin C or vitamin E or CoQ10,
mm-hmm.
even selenium or, you know, some of the
mm-hmm.
herbs like Essiac tea. A lot of those things can actually interfere with how Protocell works on the cancer cells, and amazingly, one of the most effective ways to take Protocell is simply by itself without taking any other supplements.
Mm-hmm.
And since it only costs about $75 to $85 a month, depending on your dosing,
mm-hmm.
people actually often save money because they've
right.
stopped all their other supplements. So it's quite phenomenal in that way.
Now, does diet interfere at all?
There's very little restriction on diet, though there are some recommendations, and again, these are simply recommendations that are put out by the various people who have become experts on Protocell over
mm-hmm.
the years, not really based on studies, but just based on anecdotal stories of people
mm-hmm.
who have used this formula. And so, in general, it's actually quite easy because you don't absolutely have to give up most things in your diet, other than you should definitely give up refined sugar,
mm-hmm.
and that's true, of course, of anyone using any approach for cancer,
mm-hmm.
because sugar feeds cancer. And it's also recommended to stay away from really high vitamin C concentrated drinks like, you know, fresh squeezed orange juice or lemonade,
mm-hmm.
you know, fresh squeezed or something like that, and just maybe a couple other things to try to reduce. But it's actually not a really strict diet change either
mm-hmm.
when a person uses Protocell. So, for instance, one of the really good things about Protocell is that it can be used by elderly people who maybe don't have the energy to do a really strict diet and maybe a lot of fresh juices and, or maybe just don't have the willpower to change the diet they've been
right.
on for 80 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also very easy for, you know, as I mentioned, for young children to be given this because also it doesn't involve pills, and sometimes, you know, you don't want to have to give a little child, you know, mountains of
mm-hmm.
capsules every day.
Right.
But it's really quite a phenomenal formula, and I found over the years that there are a lot of really great alternative cancer therapies out there, and I
mm-hmm.
have huge respect for many of the others that are actually listed in my book, like Dr. Brzezinski's anti-neoplastin therapy or flaxseed oil and cottage cheese, the cesium high pH therapy, some of the herbal approaches like Essiac, Dr. Kelly's enzyme approach. Those types of things
mm-hmm.
all have great track records.
Mm-hmm.
What I did find with Protocell, however, was that it is probably one of, you know, definitely one of the easiest and cheapest to use for the same powerful results, and,
oh.
and in many cases, even more powerful results than some of these other approaches, particularly
mm-hmm.
because it's also able to be very effective against cancer of any type in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So I've come across cases of people using it for leukemia with success. There was a little girl, in fact, one of the stories in my book and on the CD as well, is of a little girl who was 2 years old when she was diagnosed with leukemia, and the doctors gave her all the, you know, chemotherapy that they could and put her into remission, but then the cancer came back, the remission wasn't complete,
mm-hmm.
so she was continuing to battle the leukemia. At this point, it was acute lymphoblastic leukemia, and the doctors told her parents that the only thing they could do would be to give her a bone marrow transplant. And the mother said, well, what's the chance of survival with that? And they said only about 5 to 15%.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mother felt that that wasn't good enough for
right.
her little girl. And I think it was at age 3 or 4 that they started her on Protocell, because this was after her remission had ended.
Mm-hmm.
And within just a few months, all of her tests for leukemia were normal. Even with a bone marrow sample, she was not showing any evidence of leukemia. This little girl went on. I followed her case actually for years until she was about 8 years old, and then
mm-hmm.
I lost touch with the family, and she was doing just fine. Now, her mother did keep her on the Protocell, didn't stop it right away.
Oh, she did.
Mm-hmm. It is important to stay on an alternative treatment for a while after remission.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to stop it as soon as all your scans are clear, for instance. You want to stay on it for a while. So when it comes to children, a lot of times the parents will actually keep them on an alternative therapy like Protocell for several years, even after the after the scans are clear, just to be sure, just to make sure that they get every last cancer cell, and also because it's so non-toxic and easy
mm-hmm.
to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, people like to hear about case studies, so can you tell us some others?
Well, I can tell you some more of the cases that I've known about. Unfortunately, Protocell is pretty much like a lot of the other alternative treatments out there today for cancer,
mm-hmm.
where nobody's really doing any official studies on them. And, of course, this is because the cancer industry is not supportive of alternative therapies.
Right.
And, you know, the FDA and the National Cancer Institute, in fact, have played huge roles in suppressing alternative therapies.
Right.
But some of the other cases, oh, I certainly can probably sit here for hours to tell you of many of the cases I know. One is a recent one. A man, I just came across this case a few months ago, and I was lucky enough to contact this man because I'd never known of him before, but I heard about him secondhand, and his name is Herb. And I was able to record his testimonial and put that in his own words on the audio CD that's in my book.
Mm-hmm.
In Herb's case, he was a man who was diagnosed with prostate cancer. I believe it was in his early 60s when he was diagnosed. And he went through surgery for removal of the prostate gland. So he had a prostatectomy. Then somewhere around 10 or 11 years later, they discovered that his prostate cancer had returned, which, of course, means that they never did get it all
mm-hmm.
in the surgery. And this time it was metastasized. Now, when Herb was re-diagnosed with prostate cancer, the second time he discovered that he had prostate cancer that had metastasized to the bones in his pelvis, to his femur, which is the large bone in the leg, to his ribs, and to his spine. So he had very extensive bone metastases as well as cancer in the lymph system. And he ended up having to go on to some pretty heavy pain medications, too,
mm-hmm.
because of the pain in the bones. Now, at this point, he was able to discover pretty quickly that there really wasn't anything conventional medicine could do to cure him. Once you have metastasized cancer to this extent, it's unlikely you can
mm-hmm.
achieve a cure through conventional treatment. So he started looking around. He did do a hormone-blocking therapy for a very short while, but I think it was for just a couple months, and then he ended up stopping it because the side effects of the hormone-blocking therapy were just too much for him and too unpleasant. So he stopped that, and he ended up going on Protocell and just doing Protocell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was a fascinating case because this man had extensive metastases to many of the bones in his body. There was no cure available at all through conventional medicine. And within just a few weeks of being on Protocell, his pain had reduced so much that he was able to stop the pain medication.
Oh.
And then within a few months more, he started seeing results on his scans that the cancer was going away. And he kept getting regular scans. I can't remember at this point if they were CT scans or PET scans. I think he did a variety of scans, including bone scans.
Mm-hmm.
And over the months, the cancer kept regressing from the bones and kept regressing, and within about a year or so after he started the Protocell, his scans were clear, and he was basically pronounced in remission, including any evidence of cancer in the lymph system,
mm-hmm.
which was just phenomenal. And so, of course, this man also stayed on Protocell for a number of months after that as well to make sure he got every last cancer cell.
Mm-hmm.
But he had an incredible recovery for all intents and purposes. The diagnostic tools available today cannot find any cancer in him.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a really remarkable case
right.
that I recently came across.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a woman in Australia that I recently recorded her testimony over the phone, and a similar case where she had breast cancer that metastasized to even more of the bones in her body, including her skull. plus her spine, there was breast cancer in her spine. And this was all metastasized cancer from the first moment she was diagnosed. And there was absolutely no chance of cure through conventional treatment. But her bones were actually crumbling because of the cancer that it was had eaten away her bones and her spine. And so she had to go through a number of surgeries where pins were put in her bones. They didn't try to remove any of the cancer because the doctors knew it was too expensive. But they put metal pins in her bones to try to hold her up. And she ended up losing about 3 inches in height from all of this because of so much damage to her bones that the cancer had caused. She had a similar experience, so it took longer. She got onto Protocell, which is also sold in Australia, and she ended up over a couple of years, I don't know if it was 2 or 2.5 years or so, getting to the point where the scans basically cannot find any cancer at this point. And so she's, again, basically just another walking miracle. And I talk on the CD a little bit about how these types of stories are really everyday miracles. They're happening constantly with either Protocell or other alternative treatments for cancer. And in a way, they're not really true miracles because there is a scientific basis for what's happening here. But a lot of people think of them as everyday miracles only because, according to conventional medicine, they are miracles.
Right.
Because conventional medicine can't cure these people.
Right. Now, Tanya, would you see this as the magic bullet?
No, and actually, you know, Carl, I'm really glad you asked that because I was just thinking in, you know, kind of in my own mind as I was telling these stories that maybe I'm misleading people. I don't want people to think that every single person who uses Protocell, for instance, will be cured of their cancer. That would be incorrect. Unfortunately, there is no alternative treatment out there that I know of, or conventional treatment, that is a magic bullet. And I really think the term magic bullet got started back in the early 20th century with the advent of antibiotics. And, you know, that was such a turning point for medicine where antibiotics were developed and could cure certain illnesses very quickly and efficiently. And the problem is that people started thinking that a magic bullet could be found for any type of illness. I believe that there is a bit of a confusion there because with a bacterial disease that an antibiotic can treat, it's a pretty simple illness where, you know, it's like one cause, there's a bacterial infection. But when it comes to cancer, cancer is not a simple illness. It's actually a very complex illness and can be very much multifactorial. In fact, cancer is officially considered a chronic metabolic disease. Now, if you look at all the other chronic metabolic diseases that exist today, muscular dystrophy, diabetes, there's quite a few others that are considered in that class. None of them has been cured by a magic bullet. Diabetes, for instance, can be controlled with insulin, but, but it's not curable.
Right.
With conventional medicine.
So
really, conventional modern medicine has not come up with a cure for any chronic metabolic disease yet that could be considered a magic bullet. And that really is because chronic metabolic diseases are very complex and there's a lot of issues that are involved, and cancer is one of those. You know, even Jim Sheridan only achieved an 80% cure rate with the mice that he was using. One of the things I've discovered in talking to many, many people who use alternative therapies is that there's also a very wide range of how people use alternative therapies. Some people go to an alternative therapy that's non-toxic as soon as they're diagnosed and they never get damaged by chemo or radiation. Their immune systems, they basically intact, and they look into the alternative therapy very carefully and learn how to use it for the best possible result. Those people tend to do the best. On the other hand, there are some people who go through all the conventional treatments they can first, which tend to be very toxic treatments like chemo and radiation, where they damage their immune systems. They may damage some of their vital organs like their heart, liver, and kidneys. And so it's harder for them to recover once they get to the point of starting an alternative therapy. And it's also very, very critical to look into any alternative approach that you use to make sure that you're using it in the most effective way. And even though many people do buy my book for information on Protocell, I don't actually feel that Protocell is the most important or the best treatment out there. It's one of the very top. at least in my estimation. But I also have a lot of respect for many other alternative therapies, and I've come across people who have cured themselves with those other alternatives as well. So Protocell is just one of many approaches that can work. And in any case, any person who may start an alternative therapy, if they for some reason don't feel like they're making progress in the first few months, then they either need to work on how they're using that alternative therapy, how they're self-administering it, for instance, or they need to switch and try to find another approach that they can actually use instead that may be more effective for their particular case.
Right. Now, I think you've answered this, Tanya, but is this effective then with all types of cancer?
Well, actually, that is also a good question. And as far as I know, Protocell theoretically will work on any type of cancer if it is malignant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some types of conditions that certain researchers believe are actually precancerous conditions that, for instance, ductal carcinoma in situ, which is a form of what is called, conventional medicine calls it breast cancer. But many alternative doctors now and researchers are believing more and more that the DCIS, ductal carcinoma in situ, is actually more of a precancerous condition and is more benign. So it may be more of a benign condition that is called breast cancer. If a person truly has a benign tumor, then my understanding is that Protocell will not work on it because it's not using enough anaerobic functioning. Whereas if a tumor is malignant, or if any type of cancer is malignant, then we know that Protocell should work on it to some degree, because malignant cancer cells always involve a high degree of anaerobic functioning. Now, there are some types of cancers that it does appear that Protocell works a little better on than others, or maybe a little faster on, but as far as I know, it should work on any type of cancer, though some may be better than others. So that's the best way I can actually describe it.
Now, Tanya, you also have a new chapter in your second edition called What Man Must Know About Prostate Cancer, PSA, and the Hormone Blocking Drugs. And it seems like it's sort of out of place, so I want to ask you why you added this chapter.
Well, thank you for asking that. Actually, that's something I'd love to talk about. In my first edition, I did have a chapter in there on what women need to know about their hormones, in particular about estrogen and cancer, and also what they need to understand about hormone-blocking drugs that are used for women. Now, hormone-blocking drugs for women with cancer, for instance, breast cancer or uterine or cervical cancer, they're all estrogen-blocking drugs. What I present in my chapter on women's hormones is what women need to know about those estrogen-blocking drugs and the side effects that may occur, some of them life-threatening side effects due to blocking the estrogen, and also whether these estrogen-blocking drugs are really effective or not. And my conclusion was that they are not effective, at least not in the long term. They may slow down cancer, but as soon as they kind of put the cancer cells into a sleep state, but they don't actually stop the cancer cells. As soon as you stop the estrogen-blocking drug, those cancer cells wake up and become active again. Basically, I published my first edition 5 years ago, and what I found over those years was that I really needed to put in a chapter as well for the men, because more and more men are being prescribed hormone-blocking drugs for prostate cancer. Now, in a man's case, the hormone-blocking drug is a drug to block testosterone. And what I discovered over the years since my first edition came out was that there are a lot of misconceptions out there about hormone-blocking drugs, their effectiveness, and what they really do. And that going along with that, there's a great misunderstanding about testosterone's role and connection with prostate cancer. And also a great deal of misunderstanding about the PSA and PSA testing. So it became apparent to me that it would be very helpful for my male readers to have a chapter about that. And there's some really fascinating information that I'm not seeing in any other books out there on alternative therapies for cancer. But I was able to get this information in my my book, in my second edition. Now, my biggest source of material on this was a booklet, not a regular bound book, but a booklet that's 28 pages long, put out by the late Dr. John Lee. And many of your listeners may know about John R. Lee. He has been a pioneer for women's hormones and wrote many books called, for instance, What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Menopause, What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Breast Cancer. Those are some of Dr. Lee's books. But he also wrote this booklet for men called Hormone Balance for Men, and I tell people in my book how to order that for just $14.95. And it gives a lot of great scientific information about this issue of testosterone and cancer and hormone blocking drugs, and used some of that information in my chapter, as well as, you know, gotten some, mm-hmm. some information from other sources.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at this point, I could just go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, did you want to ask me something specifically about it where I could start? Because this is a big topic.
Well, we usually think of the PSA as a way of determining if you have prostate cancer or not.
Right.
Is that correct?
Okay, actually, yes. That's a very good question. The PSA test was only approved for general public use and early cancer detection in 1992. So that wasn't really that long ago. It was generally, in the beginning, designed to be just one tool of many. However, what happened was, since 1992, it has become more and more relied upon as a definitive answer as to whether a man has cancer or not. And at the same time, since 1992, the limitations of the PSA test have become more and more ignored. And there are a lot of limitations. So the way men should look at the PSA test is that it is a very convenient, non-invasive blood test, but you can't rely on it as a definitive result for whether you have cancer or even how much cancer you have. And I'll give you an example. Official statistics actually have shown that a whopping two-thirds of all men with an elevated PSA do not have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if a man goes to get his PSA tested and it comes back elevated above the normal level, he may think, oh my God, I've got cancer, or his
mm-hmm.
doctor may even imply that he has cancer. Well, it's possible that he does have cancer, but he should keep in mind that two-thirds of the time when a man has an elevated PSA, he does not have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for this. There's actually a number of reasons why the PSA in a man's body can be elevated. One of them is simply from benign calcium deposits that may develop in the prostate gland as a man gets older. And these benign calcium deposits cause inflammation and irritation, and
mm-hmm.
that causes a little swelling, and it causes the PSA to rise. Other reasons for benign prostate hypertrophy, which is BPH, just an enlargement of the prostate gland, that will cause an elevated PSA. There's a few other ways that PSA can be elevated that I talk about in my book. Getting back to the accuracy of the PSA test, so we now know that two-thirds of all men with an elevated PSA do not have cancer. We also know that about 20% of all men who are known to have cancer through biopsies or scans or whatever have normal PSA.
Mm-hmm.
So got a lot of false positives and a lot of false negatives there. And the reason for this and the reason why it's not perfectly accurate is that the PSA is really not a perfect cancer marker. You know, people usually think of cancer marker blood tests as detecting something that cancer cells put out or detect an antigen in the body that responds to the number of cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
However, the PSA is a bit different from that. The PSA is actually, well, it's basically a type of protein that is produced primarily within the prostate gland. However, it is produced primarily by normal healthy prostate cells, and it's not exactly produced by the body in response to the amount of cancer. What Dr. John Lee puts forth and explains in his booklet is that a man's body produces PSA in response to crowding, which is a whole new concept. This is something that modern mainstream medicine has not yet embraced,
mm-hmm.
but it appears that there's a great deal of evidence that proves that this is true. Now, what that means is that crowding is basically when there's any type of swelling, enlargement, or something pressing against other normal healthy prostate cells in the prostate gland. If you have something in the prostate gland like a tumor that's growing, as it gets bigger, it crowds the other normal healthy cells, and they put out PSA as a result. Now, one of the reasons why this theory holds up to scientific scrutiny is because it is also known that if a man has an occult tumor, which is a tumor on the outside of the prostate gland, there's no raise in PSA at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because a tumor on the outside of the prostate gland will not actually crowd the normal healthy mm-hmm. cell that grows outward into the abdomen. So it's only something that causes pressure on normal healthy prostate cells that will cause the PSA to rise. And this is also supported by the fact that there's always a rise in the PSA level in a man within 24 hours after normal ejaculation.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a great rise in the PSA level after a manual massage of the prostate, or even just a simple digital rectal exam that a man might get from a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a routine digital rectal exam can cause a man's PSA to stay high for up to a month.
Oh.
And a lot of people don't know that, but it's simply
mm-hmm.
whenever you put pressure on that prostate, and it's not always a bad pressure, like a little massage or an examination, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does cause the PSA to rise, and the reason is because normal healthy cells put out PSA in response to crowding.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes you wonder, why is that? You know, obviously nature tends to have a reason for things that happen on the physiological level. And this is actually no different. There's a very good reason why the PSA is
mm-hmm.
produced in higher amounts when there's pressure. And the reason is that it actually is one of the ways a man's body defends itself against a tumor.
Mm-hmm.
And the mechanism there is that the PSA is actually anti-angiogenic, which is quite a fascinating concept. You may have talked about anti-angiogenesis in some of your other talks, but just for your listeners who may not
mm-hmm.
have heard about it, angiogenesis is the process by which cancerous tumors, malignant tumors, tend to grow very quickly, and they often start to outgrow their own blood supply. So what happens is a malignant tumor has the ability to promote the growth of new blood vessels to itself,
mm-hmm.
to feed itself, and that's what's called angiogenesis.
Mm-hmm.
It's when cancer creates more blood vessels to feed itself so that the cancer can spread even faster.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what angiogenesis is all about. Now, there are substances out there that are well known that can slow down or block angiogenesis, and that's called anti-angiogenesis. And that's actually something that has been proven with PSA, that the PSA that a man produces actually has anti-angiogenic properties, so it can actually slow down the tumor's ability to produce more blood flow to itself.
Mm-hmm.
Which can slow down the growth of the cancer. So by looking at it that way, which is a whole new way to look at it that Dr. John Lee has put out, you discover that you really don't want to lower your PSA. You don't want to block your body's production of the PSA. You want as much PSA in your body as you can if you have prostate cancer.
Right.
Now, what hormone-blocking drugs do is they block testosterone. And there's a whole history of how this idea that testosterone feeds cancer got started. It's still the commonly held belief in conventional mainstream medicine that testosterone fuels cancer. But it's basically an erroneous belief, in my estimation, and from all the research I've done, and there's a great deal of research out there that is proving that not to be true,
mm-hmm.
that testosterone does not fuel cancer, and that there are other reasons why this myth got started, which actually I explain in my chapter on prostate cancer and PSA. But one of the reasons why this myth of testosterone and cancer keeps getting propagated is because the body needs testosterone to produce PSA. And so what happens is it's kind of like a baker needs flour to bake a cake.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you block that baker's access to flour, he or she won't be able to bake as many cakes. And that's what happens when a man artificially blocks his own testosterone production. When he blocks the testosterone in his body, his own body cannot make as much PSA as it made before.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is that PSA level on his test drops dramatically. And the misunderstanding is that a lot of doctors will see that. For instance, they put a man on Lupron or Casodex or any of the other testosterone blocking drugs, and they will definitely start seeing that PSA level go down.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the doctors misunderstand that as an indication that the cancer is going down. but it has no relation to the cancer at all. It's simply blocking the testosterone, which is one of the main things the body needs to produce PSA, so the PSA can't be produced as much and it goes down, but the cancer is still there in the same amount it was.
So that's not effective then.
That's right. And in fact, once you look into hormone blocking therapy, the official sources will say, and you can find this if you know, for anyone who wants to do the research, the official sources will say that hormone blocking therapy is never really used as a curative treatment anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's only used as a palliative therapy, which means that they use it to try to prolong a man's life. They think that by blocking the testosterone, they will slow the progression of the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what my research came up with, and really validated by a number of different scientific studies and sources, is that it may be just the opposite, that when a man takes a hormone-blocking drug and blocks his own testosterone, he is more likely, rather than prolonging his lifespan, he's actually probably shortening it.
Uh-huh.
And there's a number of reasons why that I go into in my book. And one of the reasons is that testosterone in the body is one of those hormones that opposes and balances estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
So if you artificially lower your testosterone, you will become progressively more and more estrogen dominant. And that is definitely proven as what happens when men take a hormone blocking drug. They often get very tender and swollen breasts. They may have hot flashes. There's a number of other changes in their body that are key changes indicating estrogen dominance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is well known, and many, many studies support the fact that estrogen dominance is the worst thing you can have when you have cancer, and particularly for cancer of any of the sexual organs like the prostate gland, or for women, breast cancer. And so what happens is when a man takes a hormone-blocking drug, he's not only not doing, you know, his PSA will go down, sure, but that doesn't do anything for the cancer because there's no correlation there. What he is doing, on the other hand, is he's making his own body more estrogen dominant, which can fuel the cancer. So what he's actually doing is pouring gasoline on the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, testosterone-blocking drugs for men can actually have some very serious side effects that can also be life-threatening. For instance, reducing the testosterone in a man's body can leave him more vulnerable to heart attack. And death by heart attack. It can also greatly contribute to osteoporosis, which is weakening of the bones so that the bones may fracture or break. And there's studies that are coming out now that are showing that something like a third of elderly men who suffer a broken hip, for instance, will actually die within a year of that broken hip. There's a great risk to a man's life in a variety of ways by lowering his testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, if you really look into it and see both sides of the issue, you find that lowering the testosterone is really not good for helping a man with prostate cancer. And one of the other ways that I discovered is that there's actual research. Now, again, this is what happens when a common concept gets pulled in the medical community. There can be study after study over the years that proves that that concept is wrong. But once that concept has taken hold, it takes a lot to overturn it, as you know. So what I found, and this is one of the things that Dr. John Lee reports in his booklet, is that, for instance, back in the 1950s at the University of Chicago, there was some animal research done that proved that pre-treating mice with testosterone prevented successful implantation of prostate cancer. So in other words, if they gave the mice testosterone first, they could not give the mice prostate cancer. It wouldn't take hold. Then the same researchers at the University of Chicago tried it a little differently. And this time they found that if they didn't give the mice testosterone first and they just implanted the prostate cancer and allowed it to take hold so that now that mouse has prostate cancer growing in his own body, if they then gave those mice testosterone, the prostate cancer would promptly stop growing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some other studies that support this. So there's actually scientific evidence out there that testosterone can actually help slow prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Lee also points out some reasons why this can happen. One is, of course, what I already said, is that it opposes estrogen dominance. But the other reason that Dr. Lee puts forth is that testosterone actually can activate the P53 gene in cancer cells, which is the main gene that controls apoptosis, and
mm-hmm.
that's normal cell death.
Mm-hmm.
So what testosterone does is it promotes normal apoptosis or normal cell death in prostate cancer cells. And so there's a lot of research out there pointing to the fact that Dr. Lee is right in what he's saying, and he also presents a lot of studies,
mm-hmm.
and that this whole idea that testosterone fuels cancer is a myth, and it's a complete misunderstanding that got started up in erroneous ways, and that it's just going to take a while longer for the medical community to come around and realize it.
Right. Now,
but
Tanya, in the little bit of time we have left,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk a little bit about alternative approaches, because we both know that they have been effective in many cases, but we don't see this as a national trend where physicians are using them, clinics are using them, and so forth. What is the basis for the lack of interest overall in these alternative interventions?
That's a good question. You know, the most common question I've received or heard over the last 8 years or so of my own research and involvement in this field is that one question. Why, if these alternative treatments, for instance, you know, the variety that I present in my book and
mm-hmm.
that are presented by other
mm-hmm.
authors as well, if these alternative treatments work so well, why aren't all the doctors and cancer clinics using them?
Mm-hmm.
That is the most common question. And it's a very simple answer, but it's an answer that is hard for a lot of people to accept. And
mm-hmm.
that answer is that it's not being used by all the doctors and cancer clinics available because it's not profitable to the pharmaceutical company.
Mm-hmm.
This is really hard for a lot of people to understand. Just a side point, my feeling about Americans and our country is the average American is generally a good person. I think Americans and, you know, people all around the world, we tend to be basically good people who think that if something worked medically, you know, all the doctors would use it,
right,
and there would be
right.
no depression.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunately one of those things in our nature that we just can't imagine that anything would be suppressed if it really worked for something as deadly as cancer.
Right.
But all you have to do is you really just have to scratch the surface of looking into this field and the history of all these different alternative methods to find that they have been suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
There's actual plenty of documentation proving that pretty much all the approaches in my book, for instance, have been actively suppressed by the FDA or the NCI or the American Cancer Society or the Mayo Clinic or
mm-hmm.
a whole variety, sometimes combined. And there are various reasons for this, and it all boils down to money. In general, right now, the big culprits behind all this suppression are the pharmaceutical companies, and unfortunately, they have control over what the FDA will pursue or not pursue.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, I'll refer to a different approach called Brzezinski's anti-neoplastins, which I know I don't have time to explain, but it is in my book,
mm-hmm.
and it's run out of a clinic in Houston, Texas, by a Dr. Brzezinski, and he has cured thousands of patients of cancer with his approach, and it's a completely non-toxic approach that he has developed that pharmaceutical companies don't own and they can't make money on. So they have suppressed and tried to keep his approach from becoming an approved cancer treatment. Now, he has been working actively to get his approach approved as a cancer treatment, but he's spent probably hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars
mm-hmm.
in legal court cases where the FDA has been fighting him.
Mm-hmm.
And during these court cases, there are patients of Dr. Brzezinski's, especially ex-patients, who have been cured by him, picketing outside the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And they're picketing that, you know, they were cured by Dr. Brzezinski, and there's all kinds of evidence with plenty of documentation showing how well his treatment has worked for thousands and thousands of
mm-hmm.
patients. And yet, the FDA chose to ban all individual stories or cases. So they didn't want any of the case histories allowed into the court case at all.
Mm-hmm.
They just really didn't want to look at how well the treatment worked. All they wanted to do was suppress it.
Right.
And there's case after case like that for all of these different alternative therapies. The general idea is that the alternative therapies are all non-toxic, and they are primarily all natural. which means that they are made up of natural substances. And a pharmaceutical company cannot patent a natural substance. And they only make their really big profits on products that they can patent, because that way they have control and a monopoly on that product, and they can raise the price really high. So they really only want products that they can patent. And the way they do that is they can't use something natural. If they start with something natural, they have to modify it a little bit by changing the molecules a little bit here or there, and that's how synthetic hormone replacement therapy was developed. They couldn't just give women the normal bioidentical estrogen or progesterone. They had to change it a little so that they could patent it. But then, of course, it becomes a hormone that doesn't exist in nature and causes all kinds of side effects.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing has happened with cancer treatments, and that's partly why the pharmaceutical company likes to stick with toxic drugs, like toxic chemo types of drugs, because these are non-natural things that they can patent and make a lot of money on.
Well, right now, they're trying to take vitamin B6 and talk the FDA into making that a drug and not a food substance, because they're discovering that that's effective for a lot of things, and so they want to.
Now, I hadn't heard about this issue with the vitamin
B6. I just read about that in the last week.
I do know of other cases, though. For instance, I know when the cherry growers of California started making claims in their ads that cherries could help with certain health conditions, the FDA shut them down and said, if you claim a cherry can actually cure a health condition, then it has to be called a drug.
Right.
So there's just a lot of really ridiculous rules and regulations set up by the FDA, and it's all to protect the pharmaceutical company.
Right.
And that's very unfortunate that they're trying to block B6. They're trying to block all of our supplements and natural methods of curing ourselves.
Right. And I wish we could go on and on, because this is such an important area, but unfortunately we're at the end of our time, and I want you to talk with us about your book and about your services and products you have and how the listeners can reach you.
Okay. Well, thank you. And, you know, I really appreciate what you're doing, Carl, because I know that you're interviewing some great people and putting out wonderful information for the public. And, you know,
thank you.
Radio shows like yours are just critical for us. With my book, it's called Outsmart Your Cancer. The subtitle is Alternative Non-Toxic Treatments That Work. And you can find out how to order it or order it directly from my website, which is www.outsmartyourcancer.com. And the second edition has just come out with new information and updated information in all the chapters, plus a brand new audio CD that's bound into the back of every book. And on that CD, you can hear 12 different people tell their stories in their own words of how they recovered from cancer using an alternative approach. What I tried to do was basically I present in the book 21 different alternative therapies that have known track records, and I present the history behind them and the theory and the science behind them on how they work.
Mm-hmm.
Plus some extra chapters that are important, like a chapter about alkalizing your body, and of course a chapter on women's hormones and one on men's hormones, and even a chapter on toxic teeth. That's an interesting thing for people to understand if they're worried about cancer, because toxic teeth can actually contribute to cancer. I'm just trying to get out as much good information as I can to the public, like you are. My recommendation to anyone who is either dealing with cancer or just wanting to understand what they can do if they are diagnosed with cancer is to look into as many different sources as you can. Because there are a lot of different ways to cure cancer without having to resort to toxic therapies. What I tried to do was take some of the best approaches and make them as understandable as possible in a way that's easy for people to grasp.
Now, how can the listeners reach you?
There is a link on my website, but I'm not really a cancer coach. There is some information that I can share with people if they call, but I'm not like doing sessions or helping that way. If someone wants to contact me for media or press, they can go to my website and use that email link. I just want to make it clear, too, that I don't sell any treatment products. I am protected by the First Amendment, the freedom of speech, in anything I write, because that falls under the freedom of speech. So I can write whatever I need to tell people what the truth is. But if I start selling supplements or treatment products like Protocell, then I can get into trouble. And the book could actually be at risk if I did that. So I don't sell any treatment products at all. And I don't make any commission from sales of Protocell or anything else. basically just an author who's trying to get this information out to the public.
Mm-hmm.
Really appreciate you giving me this venue to share some of this information.
And would you give us your website?
Oh, sure. Once again, that is www.outsmartyourcancer.com.
Great. Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you so much, Carl.
I've enjoyed
really
it.
Enjoyed this.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.